This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. It's been almost 10 years since the collapse of the I-35 bridge in Minneapolis, a tragedy that opened America's eyes to the state of transportation infrastructure. But communities are still dealing with infrastructure issues today. Communities like Flint, Michigan, where residents don't have lead-free water after the city's pipes were corroded 2 years ago. Today is the first show in our new monthly series on the state of infrastructure. Joining us to talk about current and future infrastructure challenges are Mike Penn, environmental engineering professor at the University of Wisconsin-Platteville, and Barry LePatner, attorney and author of Too Big to Fall, America's Failing Infrastructure and the way forward. And Barry, you know, I want to first start out by, you know, having you talk a little bit about kind of your experience in looking at issues in public infrastructure.
Well, our nation's recent history on infrastructure has really been something that we shouldn't be proud of. If you go back to the origins of our nation, from the Erie Canal to the Transcontinental Railroad to our expansion west to the Hoover Dams, TVA, America has really, really become the nation it has become because of its investment in infrastructure. Infrastructure and the transportation world, infrastructure and our home security in terms of our roads and accessibility across our nation has meant the growth of this country because all of our nation's representatives across these two centuries have understood how important it is to make and treat infrastructure as an investment. In the last 40 years, we have moved dramatically away from that, and there has been a political gridlock that has exacerbated the situation to really unacceptable proportions.
Yeah, and you wrote a book, Too Big to Fall, America's Failing Infrastructure and the Way Forward, as I mentioned at the, you know, the intro. And, you know, I wonder what really kind of inspired you to write this book kind of based on the I-35 bridge collapse. I mean, I think that that was an incident that a lot of people in this area remember just up the river.
Well, I've been a construction lawyer representing almost everybody in the design and construction community for 40 years. And in that time, what I've seen is some amazing construction and advances in the way we do things in this country and around the world. But one area which has fallen behind further and further has been all of these areas that we call infrastructure, but represent transportation in the forms of our airports, our ports around the country, which are hugely important in terms of everybody from the inside of our nation to its perimeter, shipping all around the world, our electric gridlock, our dams, all of these, as well as our roads and bridges, have become problematic because we have lost our recognition of what this means in terms of the importance of today, globalism, B, national security, and three, our ability to provide steady jobs, because all of this system, all of these systems need ongoing regular maintenance. And we have to revisit that immediately as a recognized peril, or we're going to get into very, very unacceptable situations down the road.
And Mike, you know, I think you represent a little bit different side of kind of looking at infrastructure. Can you talk about, you know, as an environmental engineer, kind of what you look at?
If you talk about infrastructure, as Barry mentioned, it's really everything. Environmental engineers historically focused on wastewater treatment and drinking water treatment, solid waste management, that type of thing. But at UW-Platteville, what we're trying to do is to change the way we teach civil and environmental engineers. Instead of just teaching them how to design a component, we're trying to get them to see, like what we say, the bigger picture, right? And that there's a lot more than designing something. You should know a little bit about how to operate it. You should always consider how to maintain it, and maintainability should go back into the design. We're trying to bring in more awareness of the students, you know, with regard to funding issues and social impacts, you know, all those types of things. I think that historically engineers were not really praised for their their activity in that regard.
Why is that important?
Well, I think it's important for what Barry just mentioned, right? The bad thing is that things are bad. The good thing is that people are finally starting to talk about it. So you heard presidential candidates talking about it in this recent election, in the previous one, I recall hearing it. It's coming up in state discussions as well. And I don't have the statistic, but somebody showed this to me once about how many times the word infrastructure appeared in like the State of the Union address historically, right? And it's starting to get talked about a lot. And what we have to do is get beyond the talk. But at least we're talking. I guess that's the good news.
Yeah, Barry, I wonder, kind of in looking at infrastructure in general, you know, how aware people are, and maybe, you know, as Mike said, people are kind of becoming more aware that these are issues.
I think, Hope, as I travel around the country and get to speak to groups in governmental areas, in the areas of transportation-oriented groups who are interested in this subject, in the area of business people who want to hear about infrastructure, there is largely a great ignorance about the issues involving infrastructure. The reason I gave my book the title Too Big to Fall was because when I spoke to politicians, when I spoke to congressmen, and I stood by a failing bridge that could collapse at any moment in their district, they would look up and they would say, that thing has been here for 50 years before I'm in office. It's going to be here in the 5 or 7 years after I'm out of office. It's too big to fall. And the reality that I try to point out to people is that we have nearly 8,000 bridges in our nation at this current moment, all of which, according to every structural engineer, bridge engineer of every type, understands that they could fall at a moment's notice because we have ignored maintenance, we have ignored the fact that their design is now outdated, and we've ignored that unless we address these perilous structures, like the I-35W in Minnesota and back in August of 2007, which fell very summarily, like the I-5 and over the Skagit River Bridge in Washington, which fell and collapsed the sections summarily, and nearly 600 bridge failures since 1989. Gravity always wins. The engineering impact of bridges that can no longer withstand the heavy 18-wheel trucks going over them without attending to maintenance is just a function of physics. And that's the reality, and they are all going to have the same end unless we start paying attention.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about the state of public infrastructure in western Wisconsin and beyond. We're here with attorney and author Barry LePatner and UW-Platteville professor Mike Penn. And Mike, I think, you know, a lot of times you talk about Flint and the crisis they're facing there. You talk about, you know, the bridge collapses that, you know, Barry has referenced. I mean, these things are pretty scary sounding. I mean, do you feel like we're all kind of on the edge of the next crisis? Is that kind of the state of things?
I don't know if I want to go that far, because you can't deny the impact of these significant catastrophic tragedies when they do occur. I cannot doubt that. But the thing is, predicting when the next one's going to occur is not so easy, right? And therein lies the difficulty. I think there were certainly issues in both of those cases of they could have been avoided. But I don't know that I'm worried that suddenly some change will happen on La Crosse and your water is going to be, you know, 2 years from now is going to be bad for everyone.
Well, we have 160 bridges on average in every state of the union, which are both structurally deficient, which means they can't, by their own definition, support the live load of traffic every day on them, so they have to close the lanes. But more importantly, those same bridges are what's called fracture critical, which is the term that means they have been designed without the necessary infrastructure and structural support, and they're begging for that additional monies, and they go without it. Those bridges, by every engineering concept, by every engineer who works for a structure, for a bridge department, acknowledges that those bridges can fall at any moment. This is not me giving my interpretation. These are the physics of the engineering. And if we had 100 people who smoked 4 packs of unfiltered cigarettes a day, we would say from the medical community, a large number of them, not all, a large number of them, within a certain period of time, are going to die from lung cancer. Our bridges that are structurally deficient and fracture critical are the same analogy.
How did we get to this point, Barry? How did we get to the point where we have so many of our, you know, bridges, you know, on the brink of collapse?
It has become a victim of the political gridlock in Washington, not in the last 2, 5, or 10 years, but in the last 30 and 40 years. What has happened first is that our nation has never allocated sufficient money for maintenance of the bridges. And that maintenance is a critical function of some structure that is out in the air, whether it's freezing weather, heat, whatever, with all of the trucks and cars and vehicles that go over them. They are subjected to these pressures and these vibrations 24 hours a day, every day of the year. So we don't attend to them. Number two, the federal government has slowly starved states of federal money because there was a preference by Congress over the years to allocate money to the states for new roads and bridges and other infrastructure, as opposed to ongoing maintenance of existing structures. We have a huge number of bridges in this country which are more than 50 years old and begging for either retirement or for major renovation to bring them up to standards. We all understand that in the world I live in and talk to people around the country. And without that support, the public is in peril. And we should not take for granted the numbers I have just cited about how many bridges there are in communities large and small. And I've talked about this all over the country, that people are shocked to know that they're traveling over and their children are going in school buses over bridges that could fall at a moment's notice. And it's just a sad fact of life. It's not addressed, and there's no desire to strongly address it in our nation's capital, and it's falling more and more on the states with limited funding to do so.
Mike, I think that when we talk about infrastructure, you know, a lot of people immediately think of roads and bridges, but, you know, I wonder if you could kind of elaborate on other, you know, public systems or, you know, just infrastructure systems in general that people depend on.
By definition, that's really what infrastructure is, right? I mean, that's the 5-second definition, is what it takes to support a society. So the first things that people typically think of are water and roads, because those are also the biggest, well, two of the biggest budget items. Wastewater conveyance and treatment is actually often the second largest expense for a community after schools. Mass transit in larger communities, anyway, it becomes an issue. The power grid, all utilities, basically, right? I mean, natural gas, communication systems, you know, it's everything. If any one of those goes out, you find out fast. So one of the old sayings is the infrastructure is like your stomach, right? When it works, you don't know it's there. You just take it for granted. But as soon as you've got a problem, you know it's there, and you want to do something about it quick because it's not pleasant.
And so, you know, because these, you know, systems are a lot of times are kind of, you know, quietly going in the background and kind of keeping things mm-hmm. together, you know, how do you think, you know, from your perspective, from this area of the state, from our state in general, has been, I guess, the stance toward maintenance and towards, you know, upkeep of these systems?
Well, I agree with Barry that the significant issue here is funding available for maintenance. And if maybe you could say there's an analogy between, you know, governments and people. It's just, when things are tight, you don't do maintenance, right? That's always the first thing you cut. If your budget's tight, you do it around your house. Like, oh, I can't paint. Don't have the money this year. I'll get to it next year. And all of a sudden, all your eaves are rotted out, and then you've got to replace your roof. So, you know, I think that that's just sort of the way it plays out, is that the maintenance costs are really significant. The other thing I think that's difficult for people to consider is the lifespans on infrastructure are so long, right? And that's sort of what Barry was alluding to. We put in a lot of bridges in the 20s and 30s and 40s and 50s and 60s, and now they're 50, 60, 70, 80 years old. A lot of the water lines, the water mains in lots of communities are 70, 80, 90 years old, and they can only last so long, right? And that maintenance over those really long periods of time becomes even more important. And the other thing is you try to extend the life of it, sort of using the automobile analogy, right? When before you get a good job, you get a car and you just keep trying to pump money in it. Yeah, I hope I can get another 50, 20,000 miles out of this. And then finally, at some point, you're like, I can't. Either it collapses or what you're paying to just make the car work. You're like, I could just buy a new car for how much I'm putting into this thing. Well, a new used car. I guess that's what I think, right, is that we need to start just thinking differently about how important the maintenance really is.
That's Mike Penn, environmental engineering professor at UW-Platteville, here with us today for the first show in our new monthly series on the state of public infrastructure. Also joining us is Barry LePatner, author of several books on national infrastructure issues. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. And Barry, you know, we've been talking about how, you know, it seems that awareness about infrastructure needs is sort of you know, increasing in recent years. You were kind of hearing it talked about a little bit more. You know, I wonder if we're also kind of seeing, you know, from a national perspective, you know, more movements to invest in infrastructure and what those might look like.
Well, behind the scenes, there has been an amazing array of forces that have been urging our federal government and in many situations our state governments to make the investments needed to bring our infrastructure up to acceptable standards. We have numerous financially secure funding sources around the nation who want to invest in what's called public-private partnerships, sometimes called P3s, to work in conjunction with governmental agencies on the state and federal level to either build or remodel existing facilities like roads and bridges, where the concept is that these outside investors, or these private parts of the partnership, will invest and pay for either the building or the renovation of the road or the bridge, put tolls on in order to recapture their investment over a 75-year lease or a 99-year lease, they're usually very long-term, and in that way provide the funding that is missing from the federal and state governments. On its face, our nation is going to have to move in this direction because of the tremendous depth of the financial hole we're in when it comes to putting money into our infrastructure reinvestment. But we also have to be very, very careful that there is a situation where the public does become the one who has to fund this, whereas in the past, the federal government paid 80 to 90% of the cost of all bridges and major roads, and the states assumed the other 10 or 20%, and that balance now is really threatened because our gas tax, where we pay 18.5 cents on each gallon, has not supported the Highway Trust Fund, and therefore that normal source of funding, because cars are getting much, much, much more, and even trucks, much more gas mileage and not filling up their tanks as much. That federal highway gas fund is not there and sufficient to pay for the rebuilding of our nation's infrastructure.
So it sounds like we're going to have to rethink the way we fund these projects and look at these sorts of infrastructure maintenance issues.
You know, from things such as infrastructure banks, which is very little known but have been very successful in about 33 states, they're called state infrastructure banks. The government funds or seeds investors to invest in infrastructure and makes it a good investment for them, but recoups the amount of the investment. That has been successful. However, in Congress, in Washington, D.C., every effort to create a national infrastructure bank over the last 15, 20 years has been thwarted by congressmen who don't want to see that kind of investment made, or increasing the deficit, or for a host of other reasons. But it's been successful on the state level. We also have seen the advent, and California is at the forefront of this, of green bonds, which are financing major, major environmental and transportation projects. And these bonds have become good investments where the state of California stands behind it and eventually recoups its investment over time. So we're going to see novel, more creative ways to find to fund our infrastructure, and I hope that an increasing recognition of the need is going to lead to some of these being put into place.
Mike, what do you think some of the biggest infrastructure issues and maybe solutions or you know possible solutions are in Wisconsin or have been talked about in Wisconsin? You know, what do you think the state has really been working to address?
Okay. If I could comment on the last, on Barry's comments there, that, you know, in the end, we pay. You hear that and it almost sounds trite or whatever, but it's true. No, even if private investors pay, they have to get their money back, and they have to get their money back from us, right? We are the users. We are society. So in the end, we pay. It's just a matter of who we pay. Do we pay the federal government via taxes? Do we pay the state government via taxes or user fees or vehicle registration fees, what have you? Do we pay local, or do we pay a private toll? In the end, we pay, right? So in the end, if to get this fixed, I think we need everybody to say, let's fix this. Let's pay for this because we have to.
It's an unpopular idea, though, I think, right? Nobody likes the idea of their taxes being raised.
Exactly. And the long-term reality of this also comes in. The risk of sounding too pessimistic, but long-term decisions are hard for lots of people to make. Short-term decisions are easier to make. But that short-sightedness gets you in the end. But we have to look long-term, right? We were looking long-term decades ago when we made major infrastructure, you know, progress, let's say. So I think we have to start looking long-term again.
Well, take those two comments, which Mike says very simple and very straightforwardly. In the end, we all pay, and we have to take a long-term view. Understand that at the depths of the Great Recession we went through earlier in this century, from 2008 to 2010, 12, 13, we could have invested trillions of dollars of American government money, which would have been borrowed by the federal government for 20, 30, 40, 50 years at near zero rate. We would have put over 2 million to 3 million out-of-work construction workers, people who were on unemployment, food stamps, etc., because of the recession. We would have put them back to work, making money, earning money, paying taxes, and spending money in their communities to help other people in their communities make a living. When we create a deficit for a long-term investment by the United States, that is a very worthwhile investment because we pay near zero interest, especially at the rate, low rate of interest in the last few years. When we go to a P3 investment, when we bring outside investors in who are asking in return for putting up many, many hundreds of millions and billions of dollars for large-scale infrastructure projects, they are going to seek long-term returns of 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9% a year, depending on how they negotiate it, that we truly will be repaying more. So Mike's comment that it's, you know, how much we're going to pay is why so many of us around the country were advocating greater investment in infrastructure to take on that obligation from the federal government, where when we repay it over all of these years, it really has a huge, a largely less impactful debilitating effect on the basic taxpayer than when we enter into these deals with outside private interests.
Barry LePatner, attorney and author of a book on national infrastructure issues, is here with us today to talk about infrastructure needs faced by Western Wisconsin, the state, and the nation. He's joined by Mike Penn, environmental engineering professor at UW-Platteville. Coming up, we'll continue our conversation on current and future challenges to maintaining roads, water systems, and more. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. For updates on future shows, links to our archives, and more, like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're starting our new monthly series on the state of public infrastructure. From the I-35 bridge collapse in 2007 to the current water crisis in Flint, Michigan, communities across the country continue to be challenged by failing infrastructure. And as Western Wisconsin looks to the future, communities may be faced with a growing list of needs to maintain our public systems. Joining us to talk about infrastructure issues are Mike Penn, environmental engineering professor at the University of Wisconsin-Platteville, and Barry LePatner, attorney and author of Too Big to Fall, America's Failing Infrastructure and the Way Forward. And Mike, before the break, you know, I asked you a question about, you know, kind of where Wisconsin is at in all of this. You know, what issues has the state been looking at or working to address, and, you know, kind of what's coming next?
So there is the American Society of Civil Engineers, ASCE, the Wisconsin section. Unfortunately, they haven't recently, but 2003 and in 2007 they did the report card on the state's infrastructure. And nationally this is also done. The grades that were given were a little higher, I would say, than the national average. And you know, putting ranking infrastructure, people try to do that. I've seen some things like where, you know, to rank the states based on their quality of infrastructure. And that's pretty hard to do because there's so many facets of it. But for those that have tried to do it, I would say Wisconsin probably falls in the kind of, you know, above average, but not in the top quarter kind of thing. Some progress has been made. I was digging up some information last night just to support me before I came in. For example, in terms of the structurally deficient bridges in the state of Wisconsin, that number has decreased dramatically. I don't know if I'm going to be able to find it here real quick, but I believe that that number has been halved, I would say, in the last 10 or 15 years. So that's, you'd like it to be zero, but, and structurally deficient, it's, how structurally deficient is it, right? Is it a nine, which means it's really bad, or is it a six, which means it's kind of bad? That there, you know, there's always more to it, but, so I think progress is being made there, but I think there's a lot to do. Again, with the water systems, they're aging. The treatment facilities are aging. The distribution systems are aging. There are issues with lead services that were put in a long time ago. And again, that's sort of that whole infrastructure thing is we do these things and we're stuck with them. We didn't know lead was bad back then. We didn't know lead was bad for a long time. And now all of a sudden, oh, we literally have lead pipes leading to our houses. And so, you know, that is part of the issue in Flint. And then to replace each one of those lines to each house is thousands of dollars. And so I guess those are really sort of the issues that we're facing. But the stormwater issues. The state has increased its regulation on stormwater, so lots of communities are struggling with that. I'd say those are the things that come to mind.
And in the state, there's obviously a very controversial conversation going on about funding for transportation projects. And I don't want to spend a lot of time on it because yeah, it's complicated, you know, it's very multifaceted, but
that should be an entire hour or day.
Exactly, or week. Exactly. But I guess, you know, can you talk a little bit about, you know, where we're at in needing to address this? I mean, is this the importance, I guess, of this issue for the state?
I think it's extremely important, right? I mean, if you look at and I'm not a transportation financing expert by any stretch of the imagination, but the information that I've looked at, and as I understand it, the majority of that funding comes from gas tax and vehicle registration fees. And that's pretty much flatlined for the last 15 years. So if your revenues are not increasing, your needs are increasing, right? There's your gap right there. And this isn't even if you have this sort of maintenance monster growing in the background. You know, this is just, even if you didn't have to worry about that, if the state's economy is going to grow, population is going to grow, you're going to need more roads just, you know, for that reason alone. So we kind of go through cycles of various levels of government support and then, you know, taking out additional bonds and then dealing with the debt service later. it's a big deal, because the quality of the infrastructure drives, you know, economic growth. And then the other thing is good infrastructure does a lot more. You always just talk about economy, but good infrastructure does a lot of other things. Good infrastructure actually takes into account the environment, minimizes environmental impact. Good infrastructure takes into account social impacts and trying to increase access for people to healthcare or other job opportunities, right? And so if you do it right, it's a good thing.
Yeah. And Barry, you know, I wonder if you can talk about this idea of how infrastructure is, you know, not only is it a major, you know, funding need, but how it also can, you know, benefit our economy.
Well, let's talk about our nation as it is today, as it's going to be for our children and grandchildren over the next 20, 30 years. Between 2010 and 2050, our nation, and this is from the U.S. Census Bureau and every demographic expert, says we will grow by 100 million citizens. From today's 320 million, we will be well over 400 million people by the middle of this century. Now, this growth, people do not understand that internal growth of our citizenship is 2.1 million people per year. That's just by people having normal numbers of babies in this country, and that's been steady and relatively steady, and will continue to add that 100 million people over the next 20, 30 years. So we have to understand what this represents. And what it means is that our country's demography, the where we're people living, are continuing to move away from the north, away from the Rust Belt, and down into the south and southwest. That's where the major growth has been in our nation. And there are areas there where if we went into space at night, and I've looked at it from the new NASA space station, it looks like from the Mississippi River, almost until you get to Las Vegas, it looks like no one lives in that part of the country. Now, that's not true, but at night when you see the lights of the city on the East Coast, the West Coast, in Texas, up in Wisconsin, Chicago, Minneapolis, and nothing below that of any great consequences, you know that's where the future development is going, and that's what the U.S. Census Bureau and all regional planners admit. As that growth takes place to accommodate all those people, we are going by necessity to see tremendous need for airports, roads, bridges, hospitals, hotels, schools, and housing. And all of that is going to have an impact of $35 trillion of construction boom during this next 30 years. It is inevitable that as we build anew, we cannot turn our backs on all that exists today and that has been there in our aging roads, in our aging bridges, in our aging power grid, and our dams and our ports. We can't turn our backs on it. So our nation has to have more people looking forward and not leaving our children and grandchildren in tremendous debt and anger and behind the eight ball, because our generation today refused to see things that are going to make our nation as good, if not better, in the decades ahead.
That's Barry LePatner, attorney and author of a book on national infrastructure issues, here with us today on our first show in our new monthly series on the state of public infrastructure. Also joining us is Mike Penn, environmental engineering professor at UW-Platteville. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. And Barry, you know, as we talk about how this issue will continue to grow, and kind of where Wisconsin is at in this issue, can you think of examples of states, or maybe it's cities, that are, you know, doing a really good job of being proactive about this issue?
Well, I think there are states and cities that have really had leadership that looked ahead, as I'm talking about. Oregon is a state which years ago began to look into using advanced technologies for its building of roads and bridges. And advanced technology is really what the future of infrastructure is all about. Today, if we wait for our roads to collapse, as we have done, the impact on our nation is over $110 billion a year in terms of congestion, people sitting around and waiting, the equivalent of a week and a half of doing nothing but sitting in traffic each year. The impact of over $400 in repairs on every car in the United States because of hitting potholes, breaking rims and tires, and other damages. These are incalculable costs from our failure to invest in infrastructure. So as we look down the road, and a state like Oregon, what they have done is take a roadbed on top of a normal highway or going over a bridge. They have started to invest in putting in sensors throughout the first quarter and a half inch of the roadbed, the topping of the roadbed, so that when the road starts to erode or wear away that first quarter or half inch, they can come in and do maintenance that is pennies compared to what happens when you wait until potholes form and you have to rip up the whole roadbed, you have to close the lanes for days and weeks aside. And they've been very smart about introducing this technology into some of their roads and bridges. In New York City, an amazing, amazing thing has transpired over the last 10, 15 years. The last three administrations have invested between $5 and $7 billion on repairing the bridges that needed it and the roads and approaches to all those bridges, so that while New York City has a tremendous amount of bridges going over and through the city of New York, which has 532 miles of coastline, a little known fact, we have upgraded our bridges to the point where, except for the ones that are currently being repaired at this moment as we speak, the bridges in New York City are amongst the safest in the United States. But that has taken leadership that has said we're going to commit to those monies. We need to start seeing this. We need to start seeing transportation regionally connecting states as opposed to each state looking out for itself. And when we make those investments, nobody ever looks back and said we should have thought differently.
Mike, obviously, you know, these issues are something that affects everywhere, you know, between New York and Oregon, you know, it's the entire country. But, you know, I wonder if you can talk about kind of the impacts of, you know, infrastructure needs on local communities, on communities in Western Wisconsin. You know, how are they being affected by the, you know, the funding challenges on the state and federal levels?
Sure. And having driven up here from Blytheville, I drove for 2 hours through the gorgeous southwest Wisconsin, through Lancaster, Fenimore, Westby, you know, and I couldn't help but think about that along the way. And I think something also that Barry had alluded to earlier is that we can't just focus all of our infrastructure on new growth, and that it's a big issue that we deal with here in Wisconsin and southwest Wisconsin, is that there obviously are incredible infrastructure demands in Milwaukee and Madison and Green Bay, but they're different in the rural, smaller communities that we have around here. And it's tough, you know. I mean, Platteville just went through their budget for the next year, and they have to cut funding to the senior center and trying to cut back on city staff and all that, you know. And it's like, and they still got to do roads. They're going to redo my road next year right in front of my house in town. It's not quite a half a mile long, maybe, you know, 5-6 blocks to resurface the road, redo the water line and the storm sewer underneath it. Can I put you on the spot and ask you to guess how much it is?
I have
it's
no
a
idea.
$1.5 million. It's $1.5 million for that one section of that one street, that's a lot of money to a little town, right? And so how many of those streets can they repair in a year? And, you know, again, we need to do it. That's why I think, you know, literally, I was just saying, you need the infrastructure revolution. We need everybody to just jump up and start screaming and say, we will pay. We will pay. Because we have to pay in the end. We have to pay.
Do you think that we're going to see these investments if we don't hear that from taxpayers?
I would hope to think that the leadership would be there to make that happen without being, you know, attacked with pitchforks and torches. But it certainly would help if we stressed it even more, which I applaud you for this series, actually, because I think that's what it needs, people to think about this a little bit more than just, oh, well, they'll just pay for the road. You know, no, we got to pay for the road. And yeah, there's only so much money, and there's the pie's only so big or whatever, but if you ignore this, it's going to come back to get you.
And Barry, you know, from a national perspective on the same issue, you know, we have a new administration, a new president. You know, do you think we're going to see, you know, leadership kind of taking up this issue unless, you know, citizens, taxpayers are asking for it?
I think with the new administration, I'd like to be hopeful that we may have taken one step forward. But the real devil is in the details. We thought back in 2008 with the transportation bill that came out with all shovel-ready products and projects that it was going to have some impact on the national scene, and it had little to none overall. Congress really doesn't want to be advertised as raising the need to raise taxes. Congress doesn't want to build up a deficit. Congress has seen that the federal gas highway tax is insufficient to meet these needs, and yet for decades now, that 18.5 cents per gallon tax has not been raised since Bill Clinton was in office in 1983. And if there's ever anything that says about what the congressional mindset is about helping out our roads and bridges, that says it. So we have to be a little skeptical until we really see some action. But if there is a true intent to move forward on this, we're going to have to see not a commitment where there's one bill for the next 2 or 3 years, but a congressional action that provides substantial dollars for the next 10, 15, and 20 years. That's a commitment. That's just not just a half-hearted promise.
Barry, we're wrapping up here, the show here, but, you know, I wonder what you feel like will be the biggest issue facing the nation in infrastructure.
Well, we have to understand, Hope, that our nation is a part of the world. Like it or not, we are part of an increasingly shrinking global community. The rest of the world wants to come to the United States. The rest of the country wants to share our wonders. People within our borders come here and believe that this is the best hope and the best opportunity of any place on earth. And Americans, I believe, truly feel that way. And we have to understand to be feeling positive about our future means we can't let our spine, our infrastructure, our critical roads and bridges, which really allow us to network whenever and wherever we want in this country, to become a third world aspect of the United States. And so I think the conversation has to start and end with a recognition of where we want to be in the next 10, 20, and 30 years, and work backwards, because we can't get to where we would like to be without recognizing how important investing in our transportation infrastructure, in our dams, in our ports, in our airports, and our electrical grid. And if we get that conversation going and we get leadership and political will, we're going to get to where we're supposed to be.
We've been talking with Barry LePatner, attorney and author of a book on national infrastructure issues, and Mike Penn, environmental engineering professor at UW-Platteville, about current and future issues for public infrastructure in western Wisconsin, the state, and the nation. Today is the first show in our new monthly series on the state of public infrastructure. Each month, we hope to explore challenges facing different systems in western Wisconsin. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The executive producer for Newsmakers is John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer is John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers. For updates on future shows, links to our archives, and more, like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers.